Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Don't forget our annual Sports Radio 810 Listener Golf Tournament coming up. It's at Fred Arbanez Golf Course. Monday, July 25th, 9 a.m. shotgun start. Great course, the Fred Arbanez Golf Course. Their signature hole, the challenging par 4, with a beautiful panoramic view of Longview Lake. Go check it out right now online at 810whb.com/golf. You can register your foursome today. $108.10. Get a round of golf, golf cart, drink tickets, breakfast, lunch, a goodie bag. Tons of great prizes. We'll be broadcasting live there at the 810 Golf Tournament. Make your plans to join us Monday, July 25th. Great event. Just $108.10 gets you a lot. The round of golf, the golf cart, the drink tickets, breakfast, lunch, goodie bag. It is all coming up, and it goes quickly. So sign up right now at 810whb.com/golf. That's 810whb.com/golf. This is the, Curtis, is this, what do we see, the 109th annual?
I believe so. 109th, 108th.
I think it is. Didn't that sound about right to you, Tim?
Yeah, that's right.
109th annual?
I think, what was the...
Remember the first one where everybody had the wood irons and...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was some stuff.
Who was the guy that lived across the street from the recent golf course in Boston? Francis Ouimet? I think Francis I think he actually played in that.
I think he may have won it.
Yeah.
I think his team, won. That's, Francis Ouimet, yeah. Good call.
Yep.
What a memory there, Tim.
There you go. How you doing, buddy?
I'm well. How are you?
You look well.
I don't.
I'm sitting
okay.
Up here. I'm excited to be with you guys today. It's great to be here. It's the longest day of the year. Great day in the Grunhardt house back in the day when we were growing up. We would get all the guys in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and we would play lob pitch, hardball, we called it. And we'd play it over like by the tennis courts. So the green monster would be the tennis court's fence. And we'd try to play until it got dark. So a lot of people almost, and it. The Eastern Standard Time creeps in, like South Bend is right on the edge. So South Bend stays dark very, very late. And Chicago, because of the way the sun sets and all that whole deal, today it won't go down to about 9:30, quarter to 10. So we'd be out there playing until the very last second. That was always our tradition. Nice. On the longest day of the year is to go out and play as many innings as we could till it got dark. So
I grew up on the side of the street where we had an acre behind every yard on that side, and lived in a neighborhood with five other kids about my age. Lots of all-day baseball.
Yeah, the old lob pitch.
Yep.
Fun days.
Pitcher's hand and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Did you play hotbox?
What did you do?
Hotbox. I didn't have all the friends you did. It was kind of a sad tale.
Why?
You're such
a lovely person to be around.
I just hit a racquetball against the wall by myself.
Serena will not surprise you to know I was a dead pull hitter even at the age of 12. We had these cattails off to the third baseline, and I lined about 15 balls into the cattails.
Right into the cattails. Now, what was that considered, a ground rule double?
No, it was just a strike.
I told a team once, Curtis was up, and I was coaching third. We were playing softball together, and I told the other team's third baseman, I go, you should line up both feet in foul territory.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, whatever. Foul ball. You know, I'm 20 feet away from the line for a reason. Yeah. Foul ball. And he goes, damn, you weren't kidding. I go, I'm telling you, if you line up 2 feet left at third base, he's going to hit one right to your glove.
It's always nice to know your third base coach is, tipping off the other team.
But he wouldn't do it. And you ripped one down the line.
Everything's between the shortstop and the line. I cannot hit the ball the other way to save my life.
So are you saying that they'd have a big-time shift?
Oh, God, yes.
They should. No one ever did.
Yeah, it's like, come on, for God's sake, you've seen this guy, what he does every – it shouldn't take you, a season's worth of at-bats. He comes up twice, you're like, this guy can't do anything else with the ball. That's what's happening. That's what's going to happen.
That's all I could do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's when you get this, it's hard to get those arms extended when you're a big guy.
Where did you play in Little League Baseball, Tim?
I was a catcher.
Left out?
I was a catcher and pitched and I played first base.
You pitched?
I did pitch.
Really?
I used to call myself Lee Smith.
What did your brother play? People may not know
this. Wow.
Your brother played minor league baseball.
He did. He played outfield. He, in fact,
is he a big guy?
Little fact all there. And he's probably about 6'1", about 220.
Okay. Pretty good sized guy.
Little known fact, I was drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates coming out of high school.
Shut up.
Way. I mean, like,
yeah, you know, 107th
back then,
round.
Was, yeah. It was either that or go to Notre Dame and play football. I picked Notre Dame to play football. But I was
really, where were you drafted? Do you remember?
It was well into like 98, 99, 100, right around that area. And they just kind of called and said, hey, you know, we drafted you. We kind of own the rights. We know you're going to go play football at Notre Dame, but just let you know we drafted you. And if you're
who drafted you?
Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't know the name of the
no
guy.
No one.
I can barely remember.
It's all downhill from there.
For Pittsburgh.
They immediately went south.
If they had me, they would have made that run again like back in the 70s with Kent Tecovey,
they're like
Parker and Stargell.
Good thing we drafted Bonds, too.
Yeah. Well, they already had. They'd done all those moves.
Yeah.
And then now it's clearly like, oh, we can do whatever we want. We'll take this dope.
They did, and they took the dope. And the dope decided to go ahead and play college football. And the rest is history. You know what? It led to sitting right here with you two guys. I could not have thought
might
of
have
a
been
better
our,
thing to happen.
You could have been our baseball insider. Who knows?
I could have been.
Yeah.
After your 10 years, your 11-year career
could have
with
got
the,
traded.
With the Royals.
Yeah, my brother actually, that was one of the teams that was going to draft him, and then the Angels drafted right before the Royals. Let's see
where did he get drafted? How high did he get drafted?
He was drafted in the teens.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he gave it a go?
Gave it a go.
Yeah. Out of high school or out of college?
Out of college after his junior year. So. He started in.
Where did he go to college?
He started Northwestern.
Okay.
So
he was the smart one.
That's debatable. But he was drafted and went to the Quads.
Would your mom say he was the smart one?
The smart ass, probably.
Really?
More than anything else. Yeah.
She loved him more, though.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, every day now, I mean, I'm over there cutting grass, hanging out at her house, taking her for dinner. Your brother calls me every day. I'm like, well, Mom, I see you a couple times a week. Isn't that a good enough for you, Mom? Isn't that good enough?
It's never good enough.
Never good enough.
Never good
he
enough.
He calls me every day. Well, yeah, because he's driving home for 40 miles in traffic in Atlanta. He's certainly going to call you. He's got nothing else to do. Why? You know, I got in trouble last week with you and my mother. Now I'm getting in trouble again.
I know.
But so my brother was drafted, so he went to Quad Cities.
Okay.
And then he went to Palm Springs, California, which was a nice. I went and visited
there. Yeah,
that
was tough.
And then he went to Midland, Texas.
Although an August game in Palm Spring.
Yeah, that's pretty
ooh,
odd.
Ooh, that could.
You know, that's 7 o'clock first pitch. It's pretty toasty.
My experience with Palm Springs is driving to the hotel that's right there on the course that the Bob Hope Classic used to be played at. Mm-hmm. And broadcasting there for 2 or 3 days and then driving right back
out.
Did you
see Bob Hope's home way up on the hill?
Probably it was pointed out. I only did it once when I was a sports fan. And we actually flew from Vegas to the Ontario airport and then drove over. I'm like, why are we doing that? Why didn't we just drive? Like, this didn't even save us any time. Who was the genius behind this?
And then he went to Midland, Texas. You want to talk about a tough place to play. Hot, dusty.
Talk about a difference of cultures.
From
Palm Springs to Midland, Texas.
And then Edmonton, Canada.
Oh, wow.
How about that? And then it was traded to Oakland and went to Huntsville and then went to Tacoma and then went to work.
Okay.
So there you go. But, you know, in fact, I was talking with Bluma. We did a nice thing with Frank for Father's Day over at the winery over where Frank works. And we're talking about football and baseball. And you know, the baseball life is so hard because, I mean, you get drafted and then all of a sudden you go to a single A team or, you know, a rookie league team. And you got to work your way up. It could take years to get up into major leagues. And in football, you get drafted and either you make it or you don't. You know, so you kind of know right away. So baseball, you can hang around until you're 28, 29, 30 years old. Still trying to make it into the major leagues, and if you don't make it, you know, it's hard to start over when you're 30 years old and, you know, go and, you know, let's see, whatever degree you had or, you know, whatever you want to do post baseball life, it's hard to restart again. So the baseball, that is a tough challenge. In football, you know, you're 21, 22 years old, you get cut, and you're still a young man. You can go out and, make a living or do whatever you want to do. But in baseball, it's so hard because you're just kind of waiting, 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 and you may never make it up. Just kind of an interesting dynamic that Bloom and I were kind of talking about with the question and answer period with Frank Ball, good old Frank.
I wish football had a minor league.
You know, you and I have talked about that before, and yeah. I think it'd be great.
I do, too. I think it'd be great for quarterbacks, which is the most important thing for the sport. And I actually think it would be lucrative if you had – I think, like, are you watching any of the USFL?
A little bit, not much. I mean, I've tried. I really have.
I have, too, and I'll watch a little bit. It'll be on in the background, but I like – what's the – when I was a kid, I loved it. But when I was a kid – the best running back in college football went to play there. Herschel Walker.
Sure.
You know, the best quarterback, Steve Young, went to play there. Jim Kelly went to play there. There was real high-caliber NFL talent, and so I knew everyone's record. I followed it just as closely as I followed the NFL. I'm not following this because it's not that talent, and there's no affiliation.
Right?
I follow minor league baseball, and I'd rather watch – you know, I'm not – I don't think I'm splitting an atom here. I think most people would. I'd rather watch minor league football than minor league baseball. But I'll look at and I'll follow and I'll buy gear for, you know, they can get money off of me from following the Storm Chasers because I know these players feed to the Royals. And if you had affiliates of the Kansas City Chiefs and they were playing right now and we're like, well, that guy's got a chance to be the backup quarterback this year and – you know, that guy's going to probably be could be the starting guard. That guy's going to fight for a receiver spot. I think all Chiefs fans would be watching the USFL if one of those teams filled with Chiefs players.
Listen, I think the USFL this year, I hope they continue it for one reason or another because of money or because of maybe they're worried about COVID even at that time when they kind of developed the league. They play all their games in Birmingham, and there's really nobody in the stands. So, I mean, if you are the, team from wherever you're from, you know, if you're affiliated with a football team and then, you know, you play, let's just say, okay, there was the Kansas City Chiefs team, affiliated team plays in Columbia, Missouri, or plays in Wichita, Kansas, or plays in Topeka, Kansas, whatever. You know, I think that'd be really cool to have that feeder system. And everybody always says that, you know, college football is a kind of a minor leagues or feeder to the NFL. But, I mean, each college team / league / conference, they have kind of different things they do, right? I mean, mostly SEC is mostly pro-style offenses. But there's a lot out there that are doing all kinds of different things. You see the option. You see the single wing. You see, you know, what Georgia Tech runs and all those kind of things. So, you know, if they had a minor league with 10 or 12 teams and they ran basically the offenses of the teams that they were going to go up, they could, you know, help those guys to develop, and then they'd be ready to go on. Because I think there are some guys that fall through the cracks because maybe they just haven't been exposed to, or they're just, haven't been in a program that can help propel them to go ahead and make a team in a couple weeks when they haven't been exposed to what they're supposed to do.
Well, and I think you'd get a higher caliber of football, right? Because I think instead of having open tryouts, like when you have a rash of injuries and you have open tryouts for guys that don't know your system and you come in and you try to wedge them in and they only know a little bit of the playbook, you'd have guys that would know the playbook.
Right.
And you get to your fourth deep, but he at least knows what to do. And you know, you could plug them in and go. I mean, they obviously like the idea because they keep expanding the practice squad.
Yeah, so if you think about with the Chiefs alone, just with their squad, what guys do you think would have benefited from being in a minor league type of deal that were affiliated with the Kansas City Chiefs? Let's start at the wide receiver.
I think real quick before you get to that, just think about if there had been a minor league, the Chargers could have had Trent Green starting for them because they had him in camp and they cut him because he couldn't go play. And then I don't know where did he pop. He had 5 minutes in Canada too. But eventually found his way to the now Commanders and got going. But the Chargers went through boob after boob after boob. And if they'd had a team where he could have played, showed his abilities, you know, and maybe the growth that he had over 6 years waiting his turn would have happened in 1 year, and they would have had a starting quarterback in their second year, you know, off an 8th-round draft pick. And, like, I don't know why, if you're an organization, you wouldn't want that.
Well,
anyway.
Look at the Chiefs with the, just at the quarterback position with was a Bouchel that they had. He's not getting any reps. I mean, is he getting any better during the season? He's, you know, he's running scout team stuff and basically running the other offense. If he was playing right now in the spring with the Chiefs offense around him, and then let's talk about, you know, you talk about developing and procuring minor you know, like African-American head coaches and coaches, and then you're talking about female coaches. If you want to get female coaches involved in the NFL, which I think is coming and coming fast, and as I know my daughters wouldn't want to coach NFL football, but I would like them to have an opportunity if they wanted to, sure. So why not? I mean, you talk about this development process, and I think I just saw the Norma Hunt training camp thing. They just was something in the news on Twitter or something, how it's named after her, the development of a female coaches in training camp and giving them exposure and giving them opportunities to coach and be around the coaches. They'd be a prime example of letting guys develop because, you know, listen, I have been a player, and when you go to be a coach, now I was only coaching in high school, and then I coached in NFL Europe for a little bit, and then I coached in college a little bit, but it takes a little time. You just don't say, okay, you were a player, and now you're a coach. I mean, there's a lot of things that I wish that I could have learned about coaching, not just the stuff on the field, but off the field. You know, with the computer programs and all the different, you know, different ways to use a computer to draw plays up and to break down film and all those things which I was never taught as a player. And all these guys, when I went on to college, they all know how to do it because they were GAs somewhere else or they were, you know, coaches on a lower level, and they learned how to use all these programs and all these computer computer programs to, you know, put playbooks together, to break down film, to do all the game plan, all that kind of stuff. All I knew how to do was basically, you know, draw the templates up, you know, draw the plays up. I couldn't do it on the computer. And those are the things that, you know, as a player, you don't learn that because you're not exposed to that. And that's a prime example right there, is you can get the minority coaches program going, both for females, African-Americans, Hispanics, Asian, whatever. And then also you give these guys an opportunity to go and play. You can't get better. I'm just telling you, you can't get better if you're just sitting around doing nothing. And I know practice squad, they're going through individual periods, and then all of a sudden they're doing scout team periods, but they're not really getting coached, guys. And they're, because, I mean, the coaches are worried about the players that are going to have to go out there on Sundays. They're not worried about the steps of the scout team as they're going through the card plays against the defense or vice versa. They're just not really worried about it. They don't really work on it. They get a coached a little bit in OTAs. They get a coached a little bit in training camp. But when the season starts, those guys stop getting coached, so they're not getting any better. So I think it'd be good for those guys to have a minor league. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
You mentioned not doing anything. That's where they're at this time of year.
Yeah.
Mini camps are over, waiting for training camps. This is the coach's biggest fears, right? Is don't go getting in trouble now.
I actually talked to one of the coaches I saw playing golf, and we kind of talked about that. He's like, yeah, this is the period you're always worried about your phone's going to ring. And it's true. I mean, you know, there's always going to be something that happens somewhere, whether it's, you know, right now it's the NFL guys are taking a break, and then here in a couple of weeks, the college guys will be taking a break. And on both levels, gosh, I remember when I was coaching at KU, you know, that was a time when you had about a week and a half, 2 weeks before after workouts, and then when training camp started, and the guys go home. And they let their hair down a little bit. They've been working hard, and, you know, they deserve a little time off and a little R&R. And, you know, you're a 20, 21, 22-year-old kid. Your R&R is going to be, hey, let's go to the lake and do cannonballs off of cliffs and drink beer and hang out and do all those kind of things. And you're always just sweating it out, making sure that nobody gets hurt, and you're always worried about that phone ringing. And so I actually talked to one of the NFL coaches, and he's like, yeah. He goes, you know, you always worry about it because, you know, you trust your guys. But, you know, you're put in a situation, all of a sudden you're having a good time and you're in a backyard at a barbecue or something, and something happens, and the next thing you know, you're you're in the middle of a bunch of crap, and guess who the first one they're going to point the finger at is the guy that everybody knows. So you got to just hope that they make good decisions.
Grunhard's with us. He's brought to you by CBD American. Shaman, we'll take a break. What are we worried about headed into training camp? I think a little bit about the defensive backs. I'll give a reason why. Maybe there should be some worry there. Defensive line, where are Tim's worries? We'll talk about that next here in the program.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Who was the first rookie to have two 100-yard rushing games in the postseason?
Not for the Chiefs, Tim, just in NFL history.
Marcus Allen.
Nope.
I tried Tony Dorsett, and he said no.
Nope.
I don't think you're going to get this.
Probably not.
Same team as Tony Dorsett earlier.
Earlier than Tony Dorsett for the Cowboys. Boy.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. And Curtis gave me the clue how I finally got it. He's like, better known for flaming out than really.
I have no idea.
Dwayne Thomas.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
1970. There have been four since then. Icky Woods, Jamal Lewis, Sean Green, Sony Michel. My favorite.
Sean Green, Iowa.
S-H-O-N-N Green for the Jets in 09. After the Super
Bowl. Not exactly foretelling of great success.
No.
Exactly. Stat.
No.
After the Super Bowl in 71, which the Cowboys won, and many people think Dwayne Thomas should have been the MVP, a reporter, he was known for not saying much. He had said, I'm not talking anymore. I'm done. I'm going to work, which was part of his issue. Someone asked him in the locker room after the game, you seem to really catch the Dolphins' defense by surprise, and do you think your speed is deceptive? And Thomas just looked at him and said, "Evidently."
That was good.
That is good.
Evidently, he was right.
That is good. What is great is Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. That's what we gave away there. Joe'sKC.com. You can check out the menu, order online, pick it up. Fastest, easiest way. Dine in if you'd like. Three locations, 47th and Mission, 119th and Strangline, and 117th and Row. And don't forget, if you're wanting to grill like the pros, barbecue like the pros, the Kansas City Barbecue Store is where to go. There at 119th and Strangline. It's where I got my Traeger grill. Love it. Still learning all the great things it can do. It's got an app, Tim. Did you know I can control it? Like if I had like a brisket in there and I were, you know,
you want to kind of take
slow,
it down a little bit.
I can monitor what the temperature is, bring it down a little bit.
What is the perfect temperature for smoking a brisket?
I don't know, but I know that like on the Traeger app,
is it like 200 or something.
On the Traeger app, like you go. I'll show you this. You go and you like can scroll through recipes. And then you can hit it, and if you got the grill needs to be on first,
yeah.
But it will automatically go to whatever the recipe needs.
I mean, that's awesome.
It is awesome.
It really is. I'm not just messing with you.
It's helping an idiot is what it's doing, it's fantastic.
Dummy proof.
It is dummy proof, and the recipes are fantastic, by the way. So I'm still figuring it all out, but it is great. So thanks to the guys at the Kansas City Barbecue Store.
I have been given and have different events won smokers, and I always give them away. I'm scared to death of using a smoker. Don't know how to use them. Don't want to use them.
Well, if you ever
put something in there, and then you know, it'll turn into a piece of charcoal, or the thing like I'll open it up and it'll run out.
Because I can tell you my success. I'm an idiot, and it appears to be idiot proof to this point.
Okay. Well, then that's what I need.
If you would ever accept any one of the many invitations to my house, I would cook for you. But you know, you don't come over, so.
Curtis.
Mm.
Can you stand up for me on this one?
Please. I can't stand up.
Okay.
You should go over there, Tim. I hear he's got some nice new chairs in the back porch.
Yes. <Yeah. laughs> They're awesome.
You know what? Those bright, beautiful chairs. You know what? I have never been invited over your house other than work.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't think that's true, but all right. I'll work on that.
I can't stand up for it because I don't know if that's true. It seems
Curtis,
like it would not be true.
Another thing that I heard about those chairs is they're up to 350 pounds. So you and I could sit in those chairs.
Oh, you can sit in them.
Oh,
they'll see the fat
and
ass.
They are really comfortable.
Are they?
For a fat guy.
I would not know.
Curtis has sat in them. He's over all the time.
Well, you know what? When I'm driving by,
he didn't even invite me.
When I'm driving
to show
by, creeping his house, looking into the backyard, I've never seen you back there.
He just walks out. I'm in one of those chairs.
Although, is it true that you wear an orange shirt on purpose?
That is it. He likes to blend in.
So you blend in. You look like the Orangeman. Sitting out there.
A little bit, yeah. That's what we're going for. Tim Grunhard is with us here in the program.
Yes, I am.
Brought to you by our friends at CBD American Shaman. Tim, you have any concerns as we head off to St. Joe, the next step in St. Joe? When Chris Lammons got, this is why I'm bringing up the defensive back. When they went back to Chris Lammons, who's still in the midst of whatever happened in Las Vegas, right? That's the right name, isn't it? Chris Lammons?
Yeah,
I got it right. Is Chris, though?
Are you talking about the Pro Bowl week?
Alvin Kamara and
he
everything.
Wasn't the only one.
Now, listen, I'm going to say this.
He wasn't the only one.
No, he wasn't the only one.
And you know what? And that's another reason why a certain guy stood on the table and was very upset. But we'll leave that alone because it really never came out. But there was another guy involved with that probably should have gotten just as much trouble.
Really?
Yeah. You know who I'm talking about. You know the story, but you know we just can't confirm it. So,
well, that's why I'm not saying anything.
I know. Me either.
No, and let me say this.
He's no longer here, though, which is good.
Well, and let me say this: when the Chiefs make a move like this, it makes me believe that they have gone through the situation and they are satisfied that Lammons is going to be cleared. Would be my assumption. I don't have any information from anybody directly, but that one just piqued my, like, why are you going? You just, you know, put all these resources into defensive backs in the draft.
Right.
And now you're signing this guy who's got this going on.
Right.
It's just a little bit puzzling to me. It makes me wonder, like, okay, did you get your first look at all these guys? And you're like, we can actually still use this guy. I wonder that aloud. It makes me a little bit nervous. I mean, there's talk, and Sam McDowell was in here when he wasn't trying to misrepresent my points about the Royals, you know, right, Curtis?
I'm glad you're moving on from that.
Sam and I argued a little bit.
That's the most slowly built bridge I've ever seen.
But he mentioned, you know, he's thinking they're talking about the kid who they took in the fourth round, maybe starting for this team, right? From Arkansas, what was it?
I gotta bring the draft kid, right?
No, that's the second round safety.
Yeah,
the Kentucky kid.
No, that's the offensive tackle. Thank you, Joshua Williams.
Fayetteville State.
Where?
The Buckeye? No, the Bruin? No,
Bobby Bell.
So, can you tell me what the mascot for Fayetteville State is?
Probably not. I don't think it's going to pop up here on Pro Football Reference. So,
I'm going to guess Wildcats.
That's never a bad guess. Never a bad guess. Tim, you would agree that's not a bad guess.
Not a bad guess.
Curtis will look it up. We'll know shortly. But, I mean, that just kind of – I went, are we not liking what we're seeing, that you're going back down this road?
Tim, you're not going to like this. They are the Broncos.
Oh, the Broncos.
Yeah.
No, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that one bit. I will say this, Saran. I don't know. I don't think that the Chiefs would write off a bunch of their draft picks in OTAs because what they've saw in OTAs or minicamp. But I don't think they're writing them off.
But, like, I just – again, I think they probably feel like it's going to go the right direction with him or they wouldn't make this move.
Yeah, I agree.
But I would think you have plenty of depth with all the guys you've – drafted and maybe they're just like, look, we got the okay and we think Lammons has got upside. I don't know, it just, to me, it caught my eye.
Yeah, you know, I don't know much about what the thought process is there, but I will say that, you know, you can never have enough defensive backs because, you know, if you bring in a stable of guys and you have some quality backups, and then a lot of those guys play special teams too, and you know, Dave Tobe always gets about four or five guys that are his guys, and this could have been a deal where Dave said, listen, hey, you know, if he doesn't quite work out for us back in the defensive backfield, that, you know, boy, I can use him as a gunner, or I can use him as on the kickoff team or on the return team or whatever. So, you know, there might be something where it said, you know, listen, there is some value to this guy. We've checked into it. It's, you know, it looks like he's going to be cleared. And, you know, you got the whole, listen, whatever happened with Frank Clark's deal? Whatever happened with that? Is that over? Is that gone? I mean, that's what concerned, that may concern me.
Would you like to hear somebody ask that question? Andy Reid?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be asked anytime soon.
Well, no, he's not going to be available until St. Joe.
There you go. But, I mean, so obviously, you know, they're not worried about it because they, you know, they drafted a kid in the first round, but they didn't go out and really get a free agent at that position. And the defensive end position, if you ask me what my concern is the defensive line / defensive end position. I do think that the defensive backs will be better, whether, you know, some of these younger guys play or, you know, I think Snead's better. You know, I thought last year Thornhill came around as his knee started to feel a little bit better. They got Reed back there. Who's going to be the other starting corner? I can't even think of who it is right now. Is it Fuller? He's gone.
No, right? Rashad Fenton.
Fenton.
Legarius Sneed. I would think Trent McDuffie, the first round pick, would be the guy. I will be disappointed if he doesn't win one of the spots.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think they're okay.
And Fenton's
there.
being banged up would seem to open the door for that.
And, you know, Fenton is a guy that could come in and play, you know, that extra defensive back in the slot. Or maybe they could put McDuffie in that extra defensive back in a slot until he kind of gets his feet underneath him. But, listen, the symbiotic relationship between those defensive backs and the defensive line is so important, especially with the Chiefs' defense, is you got to find a way to get some pressure without putting yourself in peril and bringing extra guys and putting those defensive backs in a bad position. And I think at times the Chiefs do that because they can't find individual guys winning at the point of attack on the defensive line. Now, Chris Jones does a good job at times to do that, and he pressures the middle of the pocket, and he gets his hands up and knocks some balls down. And, you know, he's a guy that offensive line coaches and offensive lines are always concerned with. That is the guy. You circle him first, and you got to, you know, adjust to him and make sure you know where he's at and how you're going to stop him. But, you know, you got Karloftis coming in as a young guy. He's a high-effort guy. He's a guy that's going to finish plays. He's not going to beat a lot of guys around the corner.
That's the other concern is, like, it seemed like priority number one was to improve the defensive line.
Yeah.
And Karloftis was really the only addition that was made.
You know, and Seren, you brought it up right after the season was over. When you think about point emphasis, the Chiefs, after last year, I mean, 2 years ago, whenever it was, you know, Clark Hunt and Brett Veach said, listen, point emphasis, we got to protect this quarterback. We got to go find guys, and we got to bring guys in. They brought in Orlando Brown. They brought in Humphreys. They brought in Smith. They brought in Tooney. They brought in guys. They addressed that position. So fast forward to the next year, I mean, everybody and their brother knew that the Kansas City Chiefs needed to make a point emphasis to improve the defensive line. Hadn't been done. Why? Tell me. Is there an answer? I mean, did Brett Veach think, okay, listen, we have enough soldiers here that we can go ahead and go to battle with these guys? I hope not, because or maybe they tried and they just couldn't pull the trigger and couldn't get guys done. They drafted a real high defensive end, and you know, which is a good thing, but they're still not where they need to be on the defensive line. That is my biggest concern. I'm not too concerned about the defensive backs. I think the defensive backs will compete back there. I think the defensive backs are going to be better. I think Snead is an ascending player. McDuffie, I think, is going to be a good young player. Fenton, when he's healthy, is good. You know, they have the kid from Cincinnati they drafted at safety. They have Reed, and they got Thornhill. I think they're pretty stacked in that defensive backfield, and I think they have some depth. But defensive line-wise, man, you tell me, where is that pressure going to come from? At times, Frank Clark, he can flash and make some plays, but only at times. Chris Jones is going to get double-teamed. Karloftis, listen, I'm not saying anything negative about the kid. He's going to do a nice job, I believe, of playing hard and playing at the point of attack, and he's going to be chasing things down. But he's not going to beat you with a quick move around the corner. That's just not going to happen, not in the NFL.
He strikes me like, as you know, he's going to play on the D-line. He's not going to play linebacker, which is where this guy played most of his career. But Tombaugh-Hilly-esque, right? That's the upside, is Tombaugh-Hilly. He was a very good player, going to be in the Chiefs' Ring of Honor, I think, one day.
I agree.
You know, but, you know, wasn't DT, wasn't going to roar off the edge, wasn't really going to take over a game, right? But he was going to play good, solid football, set the edge against the run, worked on his pass rush moves, made himself a better pass rusher, not off just the athleticism, but, you know, he got into all the martial arts stuff to get guys off balance and beat him. And so coverage sacks were were what he got.
That's what we're
going to
see. You're
and that's what I think Karlaftis is. I think that's what he, I don't want to say he's going to be Tom Ali because Tom Ali was really good.
Right.
But I think that's what he can be.
The other guy that I heard comparisons to, and I like the comparison, is Jared Allen, a guy that played 110% all the time.
Jared had more.
He had a lot.
I mean, Jared Allen developed that.
He developed that. When he came in, he was a long snapper. He wasn't even.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Yeah.
Jeez.
There we go. Now you've done it.
That's what he was.
He was not a long. He was the Buck Buchanan Award winner for the best player in 1AA. He long snapped. He was not drafted in the fourth blanking round to be a long snapper.
But that's what he came in and he was doing to get on the bus. And he turned into a very good defensive end.
He was the best.
He doesn't need you to stick up for him. He did great.
But he doesn't need it.
Saran, we all love you. We love him. You don't have to get so upset. It's a great story. It's a Rudy-esque type story. Don't get so upset. When he writes his book, the first line is going to be, "I came in as a long snapper."
No, it's not.
It'll probably be.
And what I don't like is it's a Rudy-esque story. By most accounts, he was at Idaho and available in the fourth round. Right? Was it Idaho or Idaho State?
One of the Idahos.
Yeah.
I think it was Idaho State.
He was a wild child. And that continued on into the NFL.
Yes.
He was a wallflower. And, you know, I mean, great guy, but, you know, he liked to get out and get after it. And you know, that final year got the couple of DWIs, one of the contract. Carl Peterson, I think, wanted to, you know, try to maybe lowball him or do what he thought was just fiscally responsible for the organization. And he didn't want to give a ton of money to a guy who he thought was somewhat of a player at risk. Now, I think he was always good natured, but, I mean, two DWIs in a year, you go, oh, wait a minute. And that's what got him sideways with the Chiefs, and they ended up trading him. But the man could always play. He was just college coaches knew the guy likes to have more fun than the next guy. And the NFL knew he likes to have more fun than the next guy. He was not. Who drafts a long snapper in the fourth round?
Nobody drafts a long snapper. They knew he had talent, but the first thing that got him noticed and got him playing. I was with him at the Kenny Chesney concert when he first came into town here, and you know he's like, yeah, you know, I'm just trying to get on a bus here as a long snapper. I didn't know if I'm at. I'm like, hey, good luck, kid.
Didn't know he's gonna be a Hall of Famer.
Now he's gonna be a Hall of Famer. Yeah, a Chiefs Hall of Famer, anyways. You think he'll go in the NFL Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I think he should have gone in the first ballot. But I think that, and I yell at Bob Glauber about this all the time. I think they're about as screwed up as it gets when it comes to the law. They've all got these agendas.
Curtis,
we're going to put this guy in 3 years and then that guy.
Once again, guys
like Will Shields have to wait like four, and Derek Thomas wait like 4 years. It's asinine.
Curtis, usually you'll give me like four or five different topics, you know, in the beginning of the year not to bring up. I didn't see the Jared Allen thing. I didn't either. I didn't see it.
He actually has a pillow in his basement, has embroidered on it, Jared Allen was not a long snapper.
I just think it's...
It is a bee in his bonnet, but
yeah.
With reason.
I think it's become...
But you almost take it personal.
Well...
He's you know what, maybe...
Because I think it undermines the talent that Jared Allen had. Jared Allen is not...
He certainly busted
through that ceiling, and everybody thinks... Yeah, so I know that, you know, I appreciate it, and I hope you do the same thing with, you know, just a fat kid from the south side of Chicago, barely creeping by, was drafted by the Chiefs. And I hope that
barely
someday...
Barely creeping by in the second round.
I hope someday that, you know, you know somebody says, yeah, Grunheim, he was a pretty average guy that, you know, was around a bunch of other players. I hope you stick up for me like Jared Allen.
If you do.
I appreciate that.
You were a second-round pick. It wasn't like this, you know, like, oh, look at this diamond that just hatched out of their ass. That's not what happened. Crying out loud. You caught a pass from Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, we were hyping the hell out of you.
At a national high. Yesterday. So somebody did say, I go, he was an All-American. Oh, I know what it was. We brought up Tom Condon.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, Tom Grunhard. All-American at Notre Dame. That guy was great.
No, he was a
too
bad,
bad you
cat.
Weren't there.
Although he was a bad cat.
Although someone said it was actually Tony?
It was Tony.
Tony.
It was Tony.
Someone
okay.
corrected us on Twitter.
Damn, it was Tony Grunhardt.
It was Tony Grunhardt.
And like, for God's sake, the man was an all, number one, he's on your All-American
list.
I'll
tell you what, I felt.
He won a national championship for you and even caught a pass from Ronald Reagan, and they can't get your name right on the freaking All-American list to know the name.
They changed it. But can I tell you?
No, why'd you tell us that?
Yeah, no,
it's way better
for the black magic.
But I will. No, they actually redid the whole thing.
They just put the I through the O.
It was
and
such a
scratched
crap show.
Out the Y.
But I will tell you that
extra line for the N became M.
I will tell you that when my kids were little, probably maybe third or fourth grade, I was so proud to bring them up and show my name on the All American thing, and they walked up and it was Tony out there.
So great.
And they just kind of looked at me and it was like,
"How much would I have to donate
Dad?
For them to change it back?"
Yeah, went, it's wow. all, it's changed.
Cool. What'd they do? They looked up and said, "What?"
They looked up and said, "Dad, Dad, that's not you." I said, "Well, that was my alter ego. And you didn't want to meet Tony."
And that, you just blankly stared at the name for like 30 seconds and went.
And of course, of course, nobody in the whole world would have ever known that, but I brought it up here.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I've been to the
self-deprecating humor that I like with myself is what endears me to Kansas City.
Life is an open book.
I've been to Notre Dame, you know, but I didn't get into the football offices. We just went around the campus and everything.
It's up in the
tour.
It was up in the monogram room. So you could have gotten up there. All you had to do is just walk. And that's what I did. It was a nice picture of you and your family with Touchdown Jesus in the background.
Yeah, we sent it to you.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. It was definitely cool. Yeah.
And then now that you go to Florida all the time instead of Michigan City, you've gone up in the world.
I go where I'm told to go.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we've gone up in the world because we're going to Florida. My kids are like, I like Michigan better, Dad. Why don't we go there? I'm like, you know.
There's no sharks in the water.
It's less crazy people.
Yeah. It's fresh water.
It's fresh.
It's impressive. It's an impressive place. Yeah. All right. We'll take a break. Tony Grunhardt's with us here in the program. It's brought to you by CBD American Shaman. All right, we're talking to Tim Grunhardt here in the program. Chiefs
so
Hall of
why
Fame
don't you,
Center.
You know, get the kids tonight, maybe go out and get some ice cream. Longest day of the year. Maybe sit out. Maybe sit out in those orange chairs.
You know what's going to happen is I'm going to throw a salad in my face real quick, and then I'm going to go watch softball, girls softball tonight.
Oh, I love girls
softball. Got a softball game tonight. And then I'm going to do a podcast. That's my night. And then I'm going to get up, and I got to work, and then I got to drive to Wichita and back tomorrow night to pick up one of my daughters, and then I got to be out of the airport around 8 o'clock the next day.
Well, and here in about
so
20 minutes.
So pretty much my life is done until Thursday at lunchtime.
And here in about 20 minutes, I get my second shingles shot.
I just got it earlier this week. Did you ever? I never had chicken pox.
I had chicken pox.
I never did. So.
So I have
my doctor
second,
said you need to get this.
Yeah, I heard it's brutal if you get it.
I wouldn't.
You know, a certain.
Get. Shingles. I thought you meant
shingles.
The shot.
No, yeah. No, the shot's not bad. I mean, people say it hurts and whatever. But,
whatever.
I had shingles. It is not fun.
Really.
It is really not fun.
Well, we had a certain guy that I don't want to because you know he's
Lebo.
No.
Stats?
Certain ex-Kansas City Chief player who's older now, whose shingles almost knocked him out. I mean, it was a bad deal. So.
Really? Okay.
I've never had shingles. So it's like a rash, it burns.
It is for a short period of time. That's the initial symptom, but it's a nerve thing. It's why it covers only one side, because it's how your nervous system is constructed. But the pain, the intermittent pain can last as long as 3 months.
Wow.
Mine lasted about 2 months.
So really?
Did you in my shoulder. I had it on my head and my shoulder and my upper, and I would get these just awful pains in my shoulder. It was for 2 months I would get this every once in a while.
I think the thing you're forgetting, and I think Thunderlips could vouch for this, pain is temporary.
It is.
Pride is forever.
Yeah,
it's just pain. I mean, come on.
Just
it's just temporary.
A gentleman who helped raise me once got shingles real bad, and I called him one day, and he sounded really wacky and out of it from the pain meds. And I said, "Are you all right?" He goes, "I got rickets." And I go, "Rickets?" And he goes, "Yeah, from when I was a kid and I had smallpox." I go, "I think you mean shingles from chicken pox, man." He goes, "Yes, that's exactly what it is." So you're either in pain or you're losing your mind from the pain meds.
Or you own the Chicago Cubs. So
right.
That, yeah, the rickets, yeah. Yeah, I get it. Nice job. Took me a second there, but I got it. Well done. Well done. So great. We did a 5-minute side track on shingles.
That's right, on shingles. We did our duty to for the vaccine people out there. Get your shingles shots.
There you go. Do you have any concerns on the offensive side of the ball? I got to be honest with you. I really don't.
Yeah, I really don't either. And I think, I forget who it's, Michael Vick or something. I don't know why I was talking about it. I saw some article today that Michael Vick's like, the wide receiver for the Chiefs are better than they've been in a long, long time. So we'll see. We'll see if Michael Vick knows.
He's obviously a friend of Andy Reid's. He's been in his coaching mentor program here before.
I'm not worried about the quarterback. I'm not worried about the offensive line.
I'm not worried about the running back, Jared McKinnon. They're deep at running back now.
I'm not worried about running back. We'll see what happens with the wide receivers. I think the Chiefs offensively are in a good position. So no injuries will be okay.
I think the pass rush and do the defensive backs, who they've got a lot of numbers to throw at.
I'll tell you, I love their linebackers. Love them.
I do too.
Love the linebackers. From those three young guys they have, the guy they just drafted and the kid from
Bolton,
Missouri,
and
the kid from,
Mississippi State. Yeah. You're in the Gulf
region.
You're in the right region.
Sneed with Tech. All right, we got to go.
Tim, appreciate it.
Love you guys.
Thank
Great
you.
Being on with y'all.
We'll talk to you soon.
See you, Timmy. All right, three Kansas Jayhawks are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Gale Sayers, John Riggins, and who? Brought to you by Good Sense.